clarification around checking the attitude. I responded, I think yesterday, about a question somebody asked around, is attitude in the area of feeling tone? And the person clarified the question, is checking the feeling tone a kind of an easy way to check into the attitude? So just a little bit about feeling tone. Feeling tone is a simple, basic aspect of experience, whether experience is pleasant, unpleasant, or neither pleasant nor unpleasant. It's a very kind of just basic experience that comes with every single sense impression. Sense impressions of body, of mind, of sound, of smell, of taste, of touch, every sense impression will have a flavor of pleasant, unpleasant, or neither pleasant nor unpleasant. This includes mental experience as well. So, thoughts, emotions, moods, attitudes also have a feeling tone associated with them. So, there is a feeling tone associated with attitude. And so, I guess the question could be, is the feeling tone in that area a reliable indicator of attitude in some way? And to me, I think attitude is way more complex than feeling tone. And feeling tone just being that really simple quality of experience, if you check in, what's the feeling tone right now? What is it that you're checking in about the feeling tone about? The feeling tone, there's every single sense impression has a feeling tone. And so what feeling tone are you checking in about? So that's a question there. So what's the attitude gets more directly at mental formations that are kind of behind the scenes, whereas a question of what's the feeling tone right now would just it seems unclear what would be the thing. Because sometimes I've seen, if I check into a feeling tone, the feeling tone can be widely different depending on what we're attending to or what has the foreground of our experience. So, for example, paying attention to aversion often has an unpleasant quality to it. And so, attending to the feeling tone of aversion, you can see the unpleasantness of it when that's an object. And then if there's the knowing of the aversion, which that could be happening simultaneously with the aversion, there can be the knowing of the aversion and the aversion, the awareness of the aversion and the aversion happening simultaneously. And hopefully it is, because you're aware of it, you're aware of the aversion, you're aware of the unpleasantness of the aversion. But if you kind of tune into, well, what about the awareness? How's the awareness here? What's happening with the awareness? Well, the awareness maybe have a more neutral quality to it, or even a pleasant quality if the attitude has a flavor of delight or joy of being able to see the aversion without reactivity. So the it could be that the experience is one of wise attitude. That the mind is fine meeting the experience as it is. But if you check into what's the feeling tone, you might notice unpleasantness there because the aversion that you're looking at or the aversion that's in the experience has unpleasantness. There's also in the experience the quality of the attitude of perhaps the equanimity, which might have a neutral flavor to it. So both can be there. The checking the attitude is kind of about orienting to what is the mental quality in the mind, what's the kind of mood or mental flavor, the kind of mental quality of the mind. And there can be, roughly we could say that many, many wholesome states of mind have a pleasant quality to them, and many, many unwholesome states of mind have an unpleasant quality to them. So often we do taste a more pleasant quality when there's a wise attitude, and a more unpleasant quality in the mind when there's an unwise attitude. But I wouldn't say that it's a reliable guide to what the attitude is. Because there can be, especially in the terrain of delusion, and I'm going to talk about delusion a little bit later, in the terrain of delusion, when delusion is functioning in the mind, an experience might happen that, like, oh, I figured it out, you know, I'm in control, this feels like I'm doing it right. That can feel very pleasant. And there could be some wisdom happening there, but there also could be delusion happening there. So, you know, in the terrain of attitude, you know, there can be a wise attitude, can have a neutral quality to it. It can have a pleasant quality to it. Very occasionally, it even could have an unpleasant quality to it. I mentioned this morning, state of wholesome regret, the quality of, oh, this is what it feels like to have caused harm, and the feeling of the pain of that. You know, so there's an unpleasantness in there, but it's not an unpleasantness where there's any kind of a resistance or any kind of contraction. So for me, a kind of a simple way to check in around attitude, one of the kind of guides that feels fairly basic and simple, rather than feeling tone, it's a feeling rather of, is there contraction or ease? Does the heart feel contracted or tight or open and relaxed? And that quality, when the heart is open and relaxed, the feeling of that wholesome regret will feel the pain in there of having caused harm, but it won't feel hard or tight or constricted. It will feel kind of, use the word like jello, a bowl of jello. It can feel kind of loose and willing to have that feeling of unpleasantness in there without resistance. So that's my own kind of simple way to check in with attitude, is to kind of check into the feeling in this area of the heart. Does it feel tight, or does it feel open and spacious? And then at the end of the morning, today there was the question, given that experience is unreliable, what do we take refuge in? How do we take refuge? And my response, my quick response was, the refuge isn't in the things that are unreliable, but in the understanding, or the alignment of with the truth of understanding the unreliability. But that, you know, that response doesn't help us to find our way to that kind of understanding necessarily. You know, it may help us to recognize that there is something that might be a refuge that's outside of our normal frame of reference for what we think about taking refuge. So that might support us in some way. But there are, you know, ways to explore this, you know, this kind of resistance to the unreliability, the resistance to impermanence. There are a couple of questions about just this. I'll read pieces of these questions to give you the flavor. This morning I felt sad and then a bit angry that I will lose every being that I love. Right now I'm not liking this reality and very sad about it. Any thoughts for how to working with this or handle this impermanence? And another question. At the beginning of the retreat, I had a sudden medical condition develop that took me to the ER on Saturday, followed by doctor's calls, etc. I'm intermittently not aware and not aware of flooding of thoughts, concerns, etc., trying to be with at times and then processing at others. Noticing that trying to control the situation entails both pushing away and pulling towards. Guidance with working with fears and flooding of feeling and thoughts regarding illness. And I would say that this kind of what's being described here, this is really, you know, the response here, the flooding of fears, the reactivity there at its base is really meeting the vulnerability of us as human beings, the unreliability of our human experience, that we don't have control, that we don't have ultimate control. And this is right in that terrain of unreliability and uncontrollability, vulnerability of being human. This is a truth. So we'll come back to that again. You know, the impermanent nature of experience, the unreliable nature of experience, that we are vulnerable as human beings, that our bodies are vulnerable to illness, aging, death. Those reflections the Buddha encouraged us to reflect on regularly, to remind ourselves we are subject to these because we have a tendency to forget that we're subject to those. That's delusion at work. Forgetting that we're subject to impermanence, illness, aging, and death. And so the encouragement to reflect regularly on these deep truths of I am of the nature to age. I'm of the nature to sicken. I'm of the nature to die. This helps to combat that tendency for us to forget, to live in the delusion that we are invulnerable. So exploring this, working with, meeting this vulnerability, I mean, it's useful. It's useful to reflect regularly on this. What's happening in those moments when we have the fear, the anger, the resistance, the frustration of not being able to make things the way I want them to be? What's happening there is the delusion of permanent, reliable, controllable has been shattered. You're seeing that truth. And at a very, very deep level, we do not like this truth. So this is the edge for us. This is an edge. How do we work with that? You know, it's not usually possible to just say, oh, well, things are uncontrollable. So, well, that's the way they are. So fear, you don't have to be here. That's just the way that things are. That's not the way our minds work. So the key practice here is really opening to all of those resistances, all of those confusions, all of those fears, all of those relationships. So when we notice that sense of vulnerability, that sense of unreliability, the feeling of resisting impermanence, I think maybe one thing to do there is to remind ourselves, yep, there's been a delusion shattered here, and there's resistance to that. Not liking that is happening. To just say, oh yeah, I don't have to not like that. That's the truth. That's not the way our minds will work. So when we notice this kind of resistance or reactivity, the kind of the work is holding both the truth of the unreliability. And, you know, I think a lot of that reactivity, I sometimes use this image of different threads coming together and tangling up to make our fear and confusion and anxiety around these truths. So we have the truths as one set of threads of experience, and we often are in denial of those truths. We're living in delusion, not really clearly knowing those truths. And then on the other side, we have the wish to be happy, to be healthy, to be safe. Those wishes are deeply connected to metta, to the wish to be happy, to the wish to be safe and healthy and at ease. And what happens when those wishes for safety, well-being, and happiness come up against the truths of impermanent, unreliable, uncontrollable? They get all tangled up. So in many ways, I think much of our suffering is kind of a meeting or a kind of a tangle between the truths of impermanent, unreliable, not self or uncontrollable, and the wish to be happy, the wish to be safe, the wish to have ease in our lives. And there's something in our minds that it's very difficult to hold both of these together as if they're equally valid. It's kind of like we feel like if this wish for safety is valid, then I should be able to control things. Or if this truth of uncontrollable, unreliable is, if that's really the truth, then I shouldn't want to be safe. That wish is invalid. We might have that feeling that wish is invalid. But both, the wish is a valid wish. The wish is a wholesome wish. The connection with that wish for well-being, the wish for happiness, serves us. It supports us. What happens is that wish turns from kind of just the pure wish of metta, the pure wish for well-being, to the demand for it, to the demand that if I'm not in control of my well-being, then I'm failing, it's a problem. And so that's where the tangle happens. The tangle between the wish for well-being and safety and the truths of impermanent, unreliable, not self. So that they get all knotted up, these threads get all knotted up. And what our mistake is, I think, is in thinking that, you know, the fear, the confusion, the resistance, the anger, the anxiety, the frustration around these truths and this the wishes for safety and happiness is that those reactions are wholly like negative. Like what we have to do is excise that reaction, you know, take the scalpel and cut out the reaction of anger or whatever it is. But that reaction, you know, this image of the tangle creates a struggle. It creates stress. Things are not flowing smoothly when there's a tangle. But the tangle is, in this image, the tangle is composed of these threads of truth and love. And so if we take some scissors and try to cut out that tangle from the middle of our cloth, we're going to end up with a hole in the cloth. And sometimes I think that part of the resistance to the feeling of the resistance to those truths, part of the reasons they don't want to be dismissed is because they are connected with that wish for well-being. And so what's called for really is a meeting of the reactivity with a kind, allowing attention, the mindfulness. And what seems to happen with that, I mean, it doesn't happen instantly, always, or even often, but it's like the tangle begins to untangle there, so that we end up then with the weave of love and wisdom rather than the tangle. So sometimes I say when, you know, that our suffering, you know, the suffering being that tangle of love and wisdom, you know, anytime we're touching into suffering like that, there's some thread of that experience that's connected to the truths of impermanent, unreliable, not self, and to the wishes, those wholesome wishes. And so the being with that experience, rather than trying to get rid of it, to cut it out, to just take the scalpel and get rid of it, we're in hovering in that space, learning about truth and love. And the tangle can begin to untangle, and we can begin to see that both the wish for well-being and the truth of unreliability, impermanence, can coexist. The way to seeing that is not to try to push away the reactions, but to open to them. Vulnerable confusion happening with that vulnerability. Impermanence and anger connected with that impermanence. Of course there's that, you know, that the habitual tendency of the delusion that we've been living with, that I should have control over things. Of course there's anger. And that anger can be held with mindfulness. The respecting our reactions to these truths. Respect and observe. Respect actually means to look again, you know, to look again. So respect our fear, respect the confusion, respect the anger with mindfulness, not by letting it take the upper hand and carry us away, but by meeting it and learning with it. What does it have to show us about truth and love? So that's really the key when we're really in this flailing around impermanent, uncontrollable, you know, maybe bow to it. Yep, I see you're showing me that I had some delusion. It's a beautiful like doorway into seeing just how many filters we carry through our lives. And to respect also the reactivity, not to give into it, but to kind of let your heart almost break, like with the compassion for, oh, of course there's this frustration, and of course there's this confusion, of course. So the looking at being with the reaction. And there will be times, clearly, and it may be in the situation of the person who had the trip to the ER earlier, that the reactivity is stronger than your capacity to be mindful. And in that case, all of the same tools that we've talked about apply. You know, give yourself a break from it, turn your attention away from it, use something to ground the attention elsewhere. Give yourself a break from it. Maybe, I mean, there are lots of ways, if you have any tools that help you to ground. We talked about some of those tools yesterday. There's some suggestions in the books that we brought in yesterday. How to ground when there's so much agitation and the mindfulness can't really meet it. So you're welcome to use those tools when the mindfulness is not strong enough to meet the reactivity. And maybe give yourself an opportunity. You know, sometimes this kind of wisdom can create the conditions, as I talked about this morning. Wisdom reflections can sometimes create the conditions to let us hold something more than we thought we could. Wisdom is very powerful. It can create a container of understanding. Even at the intellectual level, that container of understanding can support our capacity to meet something challenging. So I thought I'd have time to get to delusion a little more. There was an explicit question on delusion. But I'll say one thing. There was a question, can I clarify what is meant by delusion? And I'll just try to do that in a brief sentence. So, or two. So the example of, you know, holding the perspective that I'm invulnerable, you know, that it has been revealed to us. When we find that kind of shock of, oh my gosh, you know, my dearest friend is diagnosed with cancer, or my goodness, I have a serious illness. It's like the shock that happens there is indicative of some delusion. There's some view that was held. At its base, I'd say delusion is a view that we're holding to, that we believe as true. At some level, we believe as true, and we don't see it as a belief. We're taking it as truth. So the view, you know, well, I don't know that I want to go into examples right now, because I do want to have some time for something other than this. So I may bring a little bit more of this into tomorrow, but that's the basic distinction. That so views can be created in many ways, you know, even about trivial things. You know, here's a quick example. One of my teachers in grade school made us all draw apples perfectly round because she said apples are symmetrical. And, you know, we all knew there were these apples that were lopsided. But my understanding is she interpreted that, you know, somebody told her sometime, you know, apples are nature. They grow symmetrically, and they do grow symmetrically. You can cut an apple in half and there's two symmetrical sides to an apple. But that doesn't mean they can't grow lopsided. So she, you know, she had this idea in her mind, and it's almost like she couldn't see what something else, you know, couldn't see the other side. So this is how delusion also works. When we have a view about something as true, we tend to see things that confirm that view, and we do not see things that disconfirm the view. In psychological terms, this is called confirmation bias. So this is the terrain of delusion. And there's a lot to talk about in delusion. Both Gil and I have done multi-day series, multi-talk series on delusion. So you can look on Audio Dharma. If you go on Audio Dharma and just type delusion into the keyword, you'll find a whole bunch of talks about delusion that will perhaps elaborate a little more than I feel like I can do in this moment.